Today, looking at the politics of holiness, and particularly in the work of Giorgio Agamben. Now, although it's 30 years old now, Agamben's work, but I still think it's worth looking at and is worth engaging with still. I don't know if you've been following his anti-vax things on YouTube.
Vax is not sacred.
No, he's not. Yeah, his political position is anarchist. He calls himself an anarchist, so it's interesting. So his critique of holiness is based on that, and also his critique of people like Zizek and all that crowd, Badu. Agamben. We're looking at the politics of holiness. This is what I should have given last week for those of you who just come in, and his critique of holiness really is from an anarchist perspective, and that's the basis of his critique of Zizek and Badu as well. But so I'm just going to go through my handout really. So I'll read bits of it and talk through other bits, and I'll talk for about half an hour and then we'll have a discussion. So politics, according, what's politics? Politics is concerned with power and theories of power. And they've been presented, and they've presented those such theories of a philosophical anthropology, if you like, that conceptualizes the human in terms of power relationships within society and within civilization. Now, Aristotle pictured the human as someone who can lead a political life, bios politikos, a life of contemplation, bios theoretikos, and a life of pleasure, bios apalaustikos. And these are the ways of life in the polis, in the public sphere, in the polis. So the political life being the mode of engagement in the public sphere, that's what political life is. But this mode of engagement is conflictual in the sense that different interest groups vie with each other within public institutions of the polis for dominance. Now, a philosophical anthropology of the political human begins, another Italian, Robert Esposito, argues, Gossin Carl Schmidt, the political theologian, the Nazi political theologian.
Who has a revival.
Possibly beginning back with Agamben. With the negation, he says, Esposito says, politics begins with a negation. I've got no more hand-ups, I'm afraid. With a lack, and the lack being that which is sought after. So politics, according to Esposito, begins with a negation, a lack, something that you're seeking after. Better healthcare system or utopia. Perhaps possessed by the other in a process starting from enmity. That's his position. Well, again, it's a Schmittian idea that politics is based on a negation starting from enmity. Now, the negation, that is the beginning of politics, is articulated in legal systems at the root of the Western tradition in Roman law. As Esposito observes, a free human being was defined negatively as someone who's not a slave, being under one's own legal authority, in contrast to the slave who is under another's authority. Now, this lays the foundation for future political theory from Hobbes to Carl Schmitt, says Esposito. Politics is a kind of negation, an attempt to fill what is lacking. Now, this negativity in political attribution is characteristic of politics or theories of politics, is a feature of secular political philosophy and indeed a feature of law. So in political theology, Carl Schmitt's argument runs along the lines that the fundamental distinction is between enemy and non-enemy, i.e. friend. That's at the root of the society, the conflict between friend and enemy. That's the basis of politics. So you can see where Esposito is picking up on the idea of politics and negation as a non-friend. Thus, conflict and violence are at the heart of the human condition. Conflict and violence are at the heart of the human condition. And a politics of necessity is conflictual, a conflict that reflects the very base of human nature as rooted in original sin for Carl Schmitt. So for Schmitt, because of sin, humanity has fallen into a state of nature characterized by violence. Thus, the secular politics of power that seeks domination over the other is a transformation of the theological ontology of sin. So the theological ontology of sin gets transformed into secular politics of power. Now, on this view, holiness is eradicated from the human condition because of the very nature of the human. Human nature is sinful, and that precludes the presence of holiness within it. That's the Carl Schmitt argument. So let's hang on, let's park that argument for a bit. Okay, along comes Giorgio Agamben and his book Homo Sacer, the Holy... Oh, thanks, Rembert. So I'm on page 2, really, just sketched out Carl Schmitt's idea. And Agamben's Homo Sacer. Agamben picks up on Schmitt. This is 30 years old now, of course, but it's still interesting. Picks up on Schmitt's idea and goes further to bring holiness purely within the political realm. So Carl Schmitt says, OK, we haven't got any holiness anymore because of violence and sin in human, as being the nature of human beings. Agamben picks this up more specifically and says that holiness is purely a political category, and claims that holiness as sacrality, or more specifically the sacred man, Homo Sacer, is defined negatively. So thus, not only is human nature defined as negation, but holiness is negation, because as the Homo Sacer, it is a category in Roman law, the category of the man who can be killed but not sacrificed, which is the state of the exception. So that's his thesis, really, that holiness is the state of the exception. And it's derived from Roman law, the Homo Sacer, which has this category of a man who can be killed but not sacrificed. That's weird, isn't it? Anyway. So Agamben's thesis is that that sacredness is the absorption or inclusion of bare life, la vita nuda, bare life, into the judicial order that first occurs in Roman law. So he's pulling the holiness purely into the political realm. At first, the figure of the dictator is identified with the exception, which then becomes integral to sovereignty itself. So the dictator is outside of the law, and also defines the law. Which defines the dictator as being outside of it. So this is the entry of, he says, Agamben says, the entry of the category of life, Aristotle Zoe, into politics or into the polis, the control or attempted control of biological life by the state, which is the politicization of biological life. So the holiness being brought into the realm of the political is the state controlling life, Zoe. And he goes on to explain what he means by that. So sovereign power, following Carl Schmitt, defines the state of exception, the Ausnahmezustand, excuse my German, and what it is or is not included within it. So in Roman law, the man who can be killed but not sacrificed is the exception outside of the law, while being simultaneously a category defined by law. So there's that paradox. He's defined by the law, but he's outside of the law. So outside of the very thing that defines it. So this state of exception is a condition of liminality. And a person who can be killed without murder being committed is taking the category of the person outside of the law in a process of dehumanization in which person is reduced to bare life, Agamben's bare life, thereby becoming a non-person in legal terms who can be killed with impunity. So that's the sacred man, the person reduced to bare life who could be killed with impunity. The removal of person from the legal sphere through the legal category of the exception also means that such a person cannot be sacrificed to the gods because already belonging to the gods, that such a person who can't be sacrificed already belongs to the gods. So they're doubly excluded through the law and ontologically through being within the being part of the gods themselves. The removal of the person from legal system is thus simultaneously to place them outside of the law and so to dehumanize them and to place them in the realm of the gods, thereby to sacralize them and to make them sacred. So the category of the homo sacer is the sacred man who is named as such because simultaneously with the gods and outside of the law, and being outside of the law is reduced to bare life. That's it in a nutshell, really. So indeed, the etymology of sacer is something set apart from the verbal root sanch. So the homo sacer is set apart in both senses of being sacred because being with the gods and not subject to sacrifice, and being sacred because set apart from humanity and so able to be killed with impunity because not subject to human legal constraints. Something set apart can also be accursed. So the reduction of person to bare life is the politicization of biological life under the sign of sovereign power. It is sovereignty that defines the sacred, and the power of sovereignty is itself derived, according to ancient medieval conception, from above and is a divine right. So the divine right of kings defines the sacred, or in the tradition of Hobbes, the power of sovereignty is derived from the people who, in a social contract before the letter, invest trust in the sovereign for protection in return for obedience. Well, that's Hobbes, as you know that's a social contract. Doesn't use the word, but that's what it is. You trade protection for obedience. Like Singapore, really. So the citizen conforms to the power of the state articulated through law and receives protection from enemies and a sense of meaning through participation in the body politic. So we get our sense of meaning. What is meaning? Meaning is location within the body politic, is location within the social political space. And the condition of sacredness is defined by the state through law, and holiness is reduced to the state of exception. That's more or less Agamben's model, which he writes about in that first book, Homo Sacer, and then in those whole series of books after that, he unfolds that basic thesis that he's just outlined, and is still doing so. But if we follow the Roman legal definition of sacrality as a state of exception that Agamben has developed, this is a negative evaluation of sacrality. Of course, Agamben does not use the Germanic word holiness, but rather the Italian sacralità. But the distinction can be made in English between holiness and sacrality, or the sacred, and that's useful for enabling us to distinguish between the homo sacer as a state of exception, the dehumanization of cultural and political life that defines the human, of bios, to the stripped-down condition of bare life. Allows us to contrast that with holiness as a quality of humanity, not simply a political category, of the social and political person, a category of the social and political person which isn't the reduction to bare life. To reduce someone to bare life, to the state of exception, is to denude them of dignity. A person reduced to bare life is barely a living person, and so the dead in Auschwitz, says Agamben, cannot even be called corpses, but figures, figuren, or dolls, because placed outside of humanity. So that's Agamben's... Once you get the category of the exception in Roman law, it's just a matter of time before you get Auschwitz. And that's what holiness does to our civilization. So it's a complete negative evaluation of holiness. It's a political category that leads to violence because of the nature of human society and the nature of sovereign state. But arguably, dignity is central to understanding what a person is outside of the human, outside of the sovereign state, and also to a sense of what holiness is too. Sovereign power that invades and penetrates all aspects of a person's life is antipathetic to dignity, one would have thought. So dignity, again, he does talk about dignity, but for Agamben, dignity has its origins in Roman law again. The Latin dignitas indicates the authority that inheres within a certain positions in public duties, such as the roles of senator and consul. So the dignities are the roles which defined by the state, whose orders are to be respected. So the meaning shifts from a social, purely political and social role in the Roman state to a quality inherent within human persons, within human beings. I'm not sure if it's a universal category, dignity. I'd like to think it was. I think it's a universal, it might not be a universal category, but I think it's a universal phenomenon. But whether it's a universal category, I don't know. I don't know, is there a Sanskrit word for dignity? I can't think of what that would be.
A lot of cultures have honor.
Honor, of course, honor. That's right, honor, yeah.
That's pretty universal.
That's pretty universal, isn't it? Honor, that's great, that's very close, yeah. Thanks, June. Yeah, cultures have honor. Hmm?
Noble.
Oh, Arya, yeah, noble, yeah. Kantara, which that great book, The Two Bodies of the King, cited by Agamben, describes how the notion of sovereignty, in the notion of sovereignty, the medieval king's physical body was accompanied by a kind of mystical body that survived the vagaries of the physical. So, you know, whether the king gets sick or anything, the state body, if you like, survives. And dignity becomes emancipated from its bearer and becomes a fictitious person, just as Christ's divine person doubles his human body. So dignity is a quality of the king's second body. So dignity never dies. So it's gone from a description of a social and political role to the king's body, the second body that doesn't die. That's an interesting book, Kantarowicz, and I think it's true about the king's two bodies. I think that seems to be fairly universal, even in India. So dignity partly originates as a legal and ritual quality associated with the second body of the king, which becomes transposed onto the priest's body in the Eucharist, in Christian Eucharistic position, as a stand-in for Christ, and in turn is transposed onto the priest's physical body as a moral requirement befitting the elevated ritual and canonical position. So in this way, dignity becomes a moral quality, not simply a ritual and legal quality, or a term defining the status or role. Okay, so we've got that. Now, this touches on the relationship of theology to politics and power, and raises questions about ecclesiastical power. And in Christianity, as Caputo observes, Jesus is crushed by his enemies, unlike the gods of Greece and Rome, thereby showing that the weakness of God is greater than human strength, and the true power lies in the call for a kingdom without force. Now, what might be called the political was inevitably a political theology, in which secular power was ultimately subordinated to and derived from the spiritual power. So that's what happens in Catholicism. Holiness was at first an attribution of the institution of the church because of its being participative in the cosmic chain of being, with God at the crown, represented by the head of the church on earth. And this is further supported by dignitas being a term for socio-political status, part of ecclesiastical administration, rather than a quality inherent of inherent worth of persons. That's probably quite late, that notion of dignity as an inherent worth of persons. So it's a complex picture, I think. On the one hand, there's the homo sacer as a category in Roman law of exception that translated through the centuries to the category of exception in 20th century genocide. And on this view, sacrality as exception is not an elevation, but a dehumanisation and reduction of persons to bare life. On the other hand, we've got the idea of the church as a sacred institution embodying supernatural power on earth and representing an eschatological and soteriological structure articulated through the offices of the institution, such as that of dignitas. So you've got those two kind of positions. Now, with the process of secularization, political power increasingly shifts into the secular domain through contemporary globalized nations. Now, we can oppose Agamben's homo sacer with what we might call a homo dignitatis, the human worthy of dignity. If dignity is central to the category of the human, then dignity is opposed to the state of exception, which strips humanity of it. Furthermore, if dignity is associated with holiness as an inherent component of the category, then this holiness is distinct from the dehumanized exception of the negative sacred described by Agamben. So if we can identify holiness with dignitas rather than bare life, then it rescues the category from Agamben's purely negative critique. To recap, two points of Agamben need to be questioned, I think. First of all, the scepticism of the power of life as Zoe having political force, and B, the restriction of the sacred to the legal status of the exception. So I think we could be sceptical about the about his notion of power of life, Zoe, as having only political force. I think we can have there's a scepticism towards that, which we can talk about. And then secondly, there's the restriction of the sacred to the legal status of the exception. That's a bit too restrictive, in my view. So for Agamben against Rudolf Otto, who we looked at a couple of weeks ago, I think, the sovereign power turns life itself into bare life through its politicization or the imposition of bios upon it. So if you remember, he's very snide about it, Rudolf Otto. He says that Rudolf Otto reduces holiness to shivers up the back of the neck, he says. And he says this is just a triviality, you know, when you look at the history of holiness in Western tradition. But alternatively, the sacred might come into view as resistance to that very sovereign power that becomes manifest in the cultural field, not only as the exception, the scapegoat who substitutes for the homo sacer, but as participation in life itself. So one who participates in life itself might be considered to be holy and might be considered to be resisting sovereign power. Participation in an order that, while transcending human life, is only ever instantiated within the particularity of a life. Now, on this account, holiness is the appearance of life itself in the mode of the narrative of a life lived well, as intersubjectively agreed within a particular society, such as the life of Francis of Assisi. And Agamben wrote a book on Francis of Assisi, I think perceiving that this might be a threat to his argument. So the life of Francis of Assisi would be a life of holiness as a life well lived, or a life of participation in a transhuman order. Now, do we need that? I mean, a friend of mine devoted his life, 30 years of his working life, to looking after the addicted and homeless in Cardiff. Now, you might want to attribute the noun holiness to a life like that. You might want to do that. And it's not depoliticized, but it is to take it out of the notion of the exception of Agamben's category. Now, the language of Francis and the Catholic tradition sees this in terms of participation in the cosmic order, ordained by God and within a Christian economy of salvation, but a contemporary language that that seeks to an external account of what am I trying to say here? It's getting later at night, isn't it? The language of France is, and the Catholic Church sees this in terms of participation in the cosmic order. Yeah, okay, we understand that, ordained by God. And within the Christian economy of salvation, but a contemporary language that seeks an external account, i.e. not a Catholic account, might understand this as France is accessing the power of life. So you can re-describe that perhaps in more secular terms as France's or any saint in it perhaps accessing the power of life, but not as bare life as the exception, but in a positive way, as a positive value. So what are we to glean from this reflection on, from reflecting on Agamben? We begin to see that a more positive political anthropology of holiness can come into view. Agamben is a thinker produced within secularism, albeit with close links to his religious heritage of Catholicism. In exposing the dark vitalism of the Third Reich, Agamben shows how biopolitics entered the frame of human understanding and political control into the reduction of populations to bare life, a life under the sign of the exception, under the sign of the homo sacer. And he teaches us a lesson about the ways in which sacrality has operated as a legal category that legitimates the inhuman treatment of people. But he also shows a different side to this in his treatment of dignity, and we need to link dignity as a quality of human nature worthy of respect with holiness, I would argue, within the Agamben frame of reference. So what's the justification for this? I think we can argue that attention to human dignity and resistance to dehumanization articulates holiness in action. A political anthropology of holiness, rather than the reduction to bare life and the violence thereby entailed, might rather be the recognition of human dignity, compassion, and the capacity for communication through language that, like the endlessly generative nature of language itself, is open to a never-closed future. If language is a feature defining of humanity, then, as Walter Benjamin recognises, holiness is implicit within it as the ground of its generation. So Agamben is very interesting and is good to read and good to think with, but I think he's wrong in his scepticism towards holiness as a, because of his claim that holiness is purely a negative category, purely a political category that can be reduced to the state of exception.